Come on, you're here.
Hello, everybody. AYNE is back. I am your host, Louis Mercedes. I took a 2-week hiatus due to spring break. Had family members visiting from New York, and I had a blast. But now let's get back to business. I also created a brand new Instagram page, so I'd appreciate if you followed me on Instagram at AYNE Podcast. I had a reboot of sorts for AYNE on Anchor because I figured I had to keep up with all the updates and just make it more accessible, make it more interactive. So I have a brand new Instagram page at AYNE Podcast, and I'm also going to be uploading content to the new link, which is anchor.fm/AYNE Podcast. Without further ado, we're going to bring on Keyote Howard, my man Keyote Howard of Scriptly Adapted, as well as my good friend from college, my brother D'Angelo Smith. They're going to help me usher in the inaugural episode of Marvel Retrospect. It's going to be entry number one. We're talking about Iron Man 2008, directed by Jon Favreau. I am going to I'm going to be commenting and just having general conversations about all the Marvel Studios releases of the past 10 years leading up to Avengers Infinity War, which I am super psyched for. Karen and I got our tickets ready. IMAX is ready. We're ready. And April 27th can't come soon enough. But before that, I would just love to revisit all the Marvel Studios films because it's been a while since I've seen a good handful of them. And what better way to start than with the first Iron Man, the one that started it all. And you know what? Even if I don't get around to watching all 18 films, which is a task and a feat of mammoth proportions, if I don't get to do that before Infinity War, I'd still like to do the retrospect anyway, just because I appreciate nostalgia. And I'm sure my guests on tonight's episode appreciate nostalgia just as much as I do. So without further ado, let's get into it. Marvel Retrospect, entry number one, Iron Man.
Yes, sir.
All right, I got one guest, Keyote. How you doing, my brother?
What's going on, brother? What's going on?
Not much, you know, an eventful Tuesday.
Just absolutely.
Doing this to get some stress off my mind. You know how that goes.
I get it.
Yeah, for the listeners, we're waiting for D'Angelo Smith because this is the first time that I'm recording with two guests at the same time. So it's going to be three of us chiming in on Iron Man and giving our thoughts and all that good stuff.
Yes, sir. Sounds fun. So, man. We're gonna do great things tonight. Good things.
Exactly. Just to reiterate, I recorded this on the intro, but my new Instagram page is at AYNE Podcast. So just to give the listeners a quick rundown of what I've been up to. So, I mean, it's only been 2 weeks, but I noticed that Anchor is having a lot of different updates that are more compatible with PC and desktop and laptop and all that stuff. What's up, D'Angelo? I heard you just joined.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a minute to introduce yourself, but I was just explaining to the listeners that I have a new Instagram page at AYNE Podcast, and well, the basic rundown is that Anchor has came out with all they've released all these new updates that are more compatible with desktops and PC. So, in order to keep up with that, my original link, which was anchor.fm/AYNE, where I recorded all my previous episodes, I was signed into it unbeknownst to me up until I just happened to check. I created that account and I signed up with it directly through Google on my phone without having like an actual account with a username and a password. So I didn't lose any of the content, but I figured I kind of just have to create a new account from scratch. So this is actually the first episode on the new link, which is anchor.fm/AYNE podcast.
Very nice. So,
yeah, I'm trying to have everything synchronized with the Instagram page too. So just making some progress. It's sort of a reboot, so to speak.
Okay.
Sounds good. No, usually reboots can be good or bad, but you know, sounds like it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah, man. So anyway, D'Angelo Smith, introduce yourself, man. What do you got for us?
What's going on, AYNE? You know, D'Angelo Smith, went to Purchase, graduated in 2010. Good friend of Lewis's. You know, we all bonded together, you know, formed like a brotherhood, so to speak. So we're all real, real close. We all still keep in touch, you know, and everything, man. And yeah, that's about it for me right now, you know.
Cool, cool, man. And as D'Angelo had said, I got to reiterate, it's like a brother from another mother. You know, we're still keeping the friendship strong from 08. So which is ironic because we're talking about a film that came out that same year.
Yep.
So Keyote, any quick plugs before we get into it?
As always, you know, check us out on Scribbly Adapted on Instagram, Facebook, our YouTube page. You know, we got some we're filming a couple of new shows this Friday in studio. So yeah, man, just keep a lookout for the brand. The brand is growing, man. We're trying to do this thing, man. Try to do it.
All right, cool, cool. All right, now Marvel Retrospect, entry number one, Iron Man.
Yes.
Now I want to begin this with Now let me ask the both of you a question, and we'll all get a chance to reflect on the question I'm about to ask. But did you ever imagine 10 to 11 to 12 years ago that Iron Man, the film that is, would have became the success that it did at the box office? Because when it came out, D and I and our other boy Eric, we had seen the Rotten Tomatoes score and the reviews were overwhelmingly positive. We were surprised by like the 92% or whatever it got.
Yeah.
And we were like, man, this must be something else. Cause we were already looking forward to it, but let's face it. Iron Man wasn't a household name like Spider-Man was, or even Batman or any of those heroes. So with that in mind, after we saw it that weekend, it ends up breaking 100 million at the box office, which was gigantic for that time. Mm-hmm. So did you guys foresee that success at all?
I definitely saw that success, man. I had a feeling after they did this when they were doing this first one, that it was going to do some type of numbers at the box office, at least. Mm-hmm. Not even necessarily be a good film. I just knew it was going to break numbers because people were going to be curious. They wanted to see what this next wave of Marvel films or Marvel characters were going to be like, you know, because we had X-Men already.
Yeah.
So I think it left a curiosity to people, and people were like, listen, let's go see it. And the 100 million breaking that, it did not surprise me. I thought it might have even done a little more than that, but for that year, for 08, I mean, 100 million, that was big, you know. So I definitely saw it, Lewis. I definitely thought it was going to come. Definitely did.
That's interesting. What about you, D?
I mean, as far as as far as where I'm concerned, you know, my expectations were kind of like in the middle because, you know, as you, you know, said before, Iron Man wasn't really a household name, but, you know, just the fact that.
Oh, I think we lost somebody.
Yep, we lost somebody.
Oh, we lost D'Angelo.
Yeah, we lost D'Angelo. We did.
Oh, man. Well.
Yes, sir.
All right, we're back from that impromptu commercial break. D'Angelo was reflecting on what he thought about the Iron Man opening weekend numbers. But before he reconnects and gets back on, that's interesting, Quixote, how you already predicted that mammoth number. See, I thought it was going to do somewhere between, you know, like a modest 50 to 75 million, you know, really? Like X-Men-ish numbers.
Yeah. Okay.
More or less. So the 100 million, honestly, that really surprised me, especially considering that the only people who really knew Iron Man were comic book followers or anyone who liked Marvel. Right. So, you know, that was just my take on it. But anyway, go ahead with your insight on the box office performance for that opening weekend.
As far as the, you know, the box office performance that was concerned, I expected, like I said before, I had middle expectations, like, you know, based off the trailers, I knew that it was something special just seeing how the suit was, because that was, you know, my biggest thing, how the suit would look, you know, how would it translate off of, you know, from comic book to animated series to, you know, feature film. And, you know, it blew my expectations out the water. It looked like amazing or whatnot. And, you know, just, you know, the money it made that opening weekend, you know, says it all. So I was like, you know, pleasantly surprised that it did as great as it did.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? This is, if I'm not mistaken, I think this is right before Marvel was acquired by Disney. Really? Because Marvel Studios, they released Iron Man to Paramount. Paramount was the studio that distributed the film. And I'm pretty sure it was like a year later where Disney acquired Marvel, and then Marvel Studios started to branch out and become its own thing.
Ah, okay. Hmm.
So yeah, Iron Man, like, essentially, you know, set the precedence then.
Yeah, Iron Man was the catalyst, which is why I'm doing the Marvel retrospect. And, you know, well, obviously you have to do it from the first film, but I hadn't seen the first film in such a long time. It had to have been like at least 8 or 9 years. I think the last time I actually sat down and watched it, I was still in college. I was still at Purchase. So, I said to myself, you know what? Everyone praises the first Iron Man, and as much as I loved it, I don't really remember too much of it. So I went back and revisited it, and you know what? It holds up very well. I mean, some of the CGI is dated, but it you know, it goes without saying that it's such a great comic book film, and you can tell that it pretty much set the precedent for that Marvel formula. Like, when I look back on it now and I'm like, oh, I see all these familiar tropes and things like that. I wanted to talk about that first scene where Tony Stark is riding around with the military. Mm-hmm. And because I guess they're doing a weapons demo of some sort, where, because, you know, he's selling new weapons to the military and this and that.
Yeah, gotta see if they work.
Right. So it was like a sort of test run to test some prototypes. And as he's riding, you can already see that this film is going to be a blast, because Robert Downey Jr. was perfectly cast as Tony Stark.
Perfect.
The sarcastic remarks, the witty banter inside the vehicle. And then I got a kick out of – this is how old we are, bro. I got a kick out of him saying, no gang sizes, please, except that one when he throws up the peace sign. And he's like, yeah, you can put it on your MySpace page.
Oh man.
Oh, man. Wow.
I was like, MySpace. Holy shit. MySpace was actually a thing before Facebook.
Wow. Yeah, it was, man. And that we were, oh man, wow. God, I don't know if that shows us how old we are, or man. God, that's crazy. Facebook.
Yeah, and I was yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just sitting up here counting the grays on my beard as you were saying that. I was just, you know what I'm saying? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, wow. it was funny, but that pretty much set the tone for, you can already see that this was going to be a very well-written film.
Absolutely.
And you can tell that Robert Downey Jr. within the first 2 to 3 minutes of the movie, you can tell that he was just going to steal every scene, because this is just, it just has Robert Downey Jr. written all over it as Tony Stark.
Right.
Which is, I thought was great.
Now, I got to be honest with you, Lewis. When I found out Downey was doing it, I was 50-50 on him, man. I was split. I didn't know how it was going to be. I didn't know if he could convey Tony Stark on screen. And at this point, I've seen a lot of Downey films at this point, but nothing to make me think that he was going to be like a solid Iron Man. But like you said, as soon as that scene, you know, as he's on his way to test out those weapons, you know, it was just, he had this charismatic swag to him that was this, he embodied what Tony Stark was. And I was like, okay, he got me now. So it just took that opening scene. It just took opening scenes and a couple scenes in the film to kind of make you realize that he was it. He was the guy. So,
yeah, for sure. And D, correct me if I'm wrong, but I could have sworn we had a couple of conversations when we heard that Robert Downey Jr. was cast in that role too, about, you know, like we were feeling a little skeptical.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because when we heard that it was Robert Downey Jr., we were talking back and forth, you know, a couple of occasions, like, you know, I'm not.
Oh, I'll be back. Yeah, so go ahead, D'Angelo. Wait, a quick sidebar. You would think with all these damn updates that they would change the fucking interface or whatever you want to call it with the connection of other people coming into the recording session. But anyway, I digress.
They'll get it eventually.
They'll get them. That's on their list of things to do, man.
Oh no, I'm sending the CEO, whoever I got to. I'm complaining about this. But yeah, anyway, we were having those conversations about Robert Downey Jr. being cast and being skeptical. So what were your initial memories from that, if any?
So my whole thing was, you know, we had this conversation, we both like, there was a couple times where we both like kind of made a face and, you know, kind of like turned our head to the side, like, it maybe can work out. It maybe can't, you know, we're not 100% sure. He kind of looks like Tony Stark in the comic books. We don't know how he's going to really like, you know, be portrayed on the screen. So I do recall us, you know, going back and forth about it, like, because, you know, before, you know, him being Iron Man and, you know, being the big success as Iron Man as he is now, like before that, it was kind of, I feel like that role was like a resurrection role for him, because what his film success was, or if he was he has a very, you know, tempered past, like, you know, he went through the whole addiction thing and things like that. So I felt that this role was like, yo, it's either going to make him or break him.
Totally agree.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. Honestly, this was his revitalization. Like, this was his resurgence. It's just like you had pointed out, D, that most people couldn't even recall Robert Downey Jr.'s last really successful film. So the fact that he had this alcoholic past and dealt with abuse and stuff like that, and he was almost blacklisted from the industry at one point.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I thought this was actually a perfect role for him, because Tony Stark is an alcoholic, you know? So it was just meant to be. It was fate.
Yeah. Yeah. Like those that opening, that first scene, you know, a couple lines into the movie, like I was sold. I was like, you know, there's a handful of like characters, whether it's like superhero films or, you know, just certain adaptation films, where it's like, I feel that person that they selected to play that character was born for the role. And that was the case with him as, you know, Tony Stark.
Yeah, this was the beginning of me saying that Marvel Studios can do no wrong, right, as far as their casting is concerned. And not just their casting for actors, but their casting for directors and film crew in general, because this was the film that was the catalyst for a winning formula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, because every film subsequently may not have been perfect, but it was a success. We haven't had one Marvel Studios flop at the box office since ever. I mean, maybe The Incredible Hulk, you can call that a flop.
Listen, man, that's my shit right there, man. The Incredible Hulk.
That's entry number two. I'm getting on that. That episode, we're reflecting on that next week.
Perfect.
Yeah, because I got a lot to say about that.
It was underrated.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, brother. It was very underrated.
Very underrated.
Yeah, but getting back to Iron Man. So, all right. So Tony Stark in a nutshell. This, I'm not going to break down every single scene because otherwise we'd be here for 24 hours. But, but so Tony Stark, he's a narcissistic playboy, billionaire. He has a change of heart after his near-death experience. And, you know, when I was revisiting this film, I felt that it was eerily timely and very reflective of what's happening now, sort of, with the talk about gun control and nuclear weapons overseas and stuff like that. So he all of a sudden had a change of heart once his own creation and once the weapons of mass destruction that he was investing in took a turn and pretty much turned against him and almost cost him his life. So now he has a change of heart and the whole premise of the film is he wants to do good now. You know, he doesn't want to be all about Stark Enterprises building weapons for terrorists and stuff like that. He actually wants to use his knowledge responsibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's definitely a reflection on what you see now, with gun control and weapons and whatnot in this country. So it's really interesting how it takes that look, how it looks like that. And you know, man, listen, the film just, you know, Tony was a changed man, man. I mean, after. The man goes almost, he nearly dies. I mean, and it's almost, and it's at the hand, it's from the hands of his own weapons. You know what I'm saying? Like now he's, you know, now he has a change of heart. Now he wants to do something about this. And, you know, that's what we see in the early stages of his story, which is very interesting, which I didn't know because I really didn't pay attention to the comic books that well. So it was really good to see that.
Yeah, it was very good to see that. And just like you, like I would say I was a casual fan of Iron Man.
Right.
I wasn't a diehard fan like the way I was for X-Men, Spider-Man, and characters like that. You know, I would watch the animated series every now and then as a kid. You know, and I knew the general story of Tony Stark and Stark Enterprises, but I wasn't really knee-deep into the storylines. But I like how they made these kinds of things relevant. D, you back on?
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right. So the good thing is that I just picked up on this. If one of you cuts off, I can just send you the invite without having to shut this whole recording session down. Unless everything goes to shit.
Okay, yeah, perfect.
It works for me, man.
Cool. Yeah, so and then I like how throughout the movie you just see so much character development because it's exploring themes of maturity, accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And those are themes that weren't really explored too much prior to that. Like you had your superhero flicks here and there, where the hero would have his moral compass and things like that. But you know, all these other films, not just superhero movies, but action movies in general, sometimes I would scratch my head and say, you know what? They have affected a lot of people's lives by destroying all that shit during that fight scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm, yep.
You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. And I like how it starts to explore the fact that, you know, you're a superhero, but you're a billionaire, rich person, but you have to be accountable for whatever actions that you have. So with that said, when he starts developing, when he comes back home from his imprisonment, and when he starts developing his armor and stuff like that, that's when Jeff Bridges, the villain Obadiah Stane, that's when he begins to sort of develop a jealous attitude towards Tony Stark.
He
just has like a lot of ill will towards him because he's looking at it from the business perspective. Like, Tony, have you lost your mind? Like, this is a $1 billion industry, and now all of a sudden you want to be a superhero, not in that sense, but you want to do the right thing. You want to sacrifice our entire company, me and you built. And he's just like, no way, not under my watch.
Right.
And I thought that was one of Marvel's rare smart villains, like one of the really more enjoyable villains. Like, what did you think of Jeff Bridges as Obadiah Stane in this movie?
Go ahead, D'Angelo. You can start off with this.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Like, well, first of all, as far as with Jeff Bridges, you know, as far as where he's concerned, like, you know, his whole, like, you know, first of all, I didn't even know that was Jeff Bridges. Like, you know,
me the ball
threw me off. Like, I didn't know who it was him. But, overall, as a villain, like, I thought he was a great villain, and, like, you know, the whole backstory of it all, you know, because what he must have started the company with, you know, Howard Stark, and, you know, Howard Stark dies. You would think that the business was gonna, you know, go to the shitter. Then, you know, the rise of Tony Stark's come. He's like a brilliant, keeps the company moving, you know, it's progressing. Like, so he probably already had like some sort of disdain at the fact that a young whippersnapper came out of nowhere, and, you know, now he's, you know, filling his father's shoes. Me and his father started this. So he probably always had that, you know, disdain for him from then. So it kind of helps with, you know, as the story progresses and we find out, you know, the back dealings that he was doing and things like that. So I feel like he was an excellent villain, and, you know, to be that good of a villain in the first film of like this experimental whole thing as a whole, it was just like, damn, you guys really, you know, nailed it. You know, you hit it out the park.
I agree. I'm going to piggyback off of what you just said a little bit. Yeah, Jeff Bridges was solid number one as Obadiah Stane. I mean, it's Jeff Bridges. I mean, he almost does no wrong in films that he does. You know what I'm saying? Like, you believe his character, you almost invest in his character to the point where you almost want to see him win in a way.
Yeah,
like, you know what I'm saying? So playing Obadiah Stane, solid villain. Like you just like you said before, it kind of opened the door for this like experimental thing that we're doing as far as this universe is concerned on creating villains that actually mean something and have a purpose. You know, not just a villain that wants to blow up and destroy the world, but there's a backstory, there's a meaning to what they're trying to accomplish, which gets the audience in tune to what they're doing, and now you got the people's attention because it's not just focused on solely on the superhero. So he did solid, man. I enjoyed him a lot.
Yeah,
enjoyed him a lot.
I totally agree with those solid points, but you're going to tell me that Arnold Schwarzenegger's Mr. Freeze and Batman and Robin didn't have a purpose?
Oh, man, that's the one. I try to forget about that, man. I really do. I try to forget about that. That was painful. Painful to watch. Painful.
I think we all try to forget about that. And, you know, the irony is that when you're young, you don't really notice how crappy a film is. I loved when that summer when it came out, was that 1997, so I was like 9. But I loved it. Then as the years progressed and I got older, I just said to myself, holy shit, this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. Like, this is so bad. This is bad, dude. I mean, the acting is terrible. The art design, the production design, the screenplay. This
terrible.
Is bad, man.
Terrible.
You're rejoining us, but I'm telling, I just went off on a tangent that Batman and Robin I loved when I was 9, and then as the years progressed, it's really one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
Oh yeah, definitely, hands down.
Okay, you know what? You know what? Let me take a step back. It's not one of the worst movies I've ever seen, but it is one of the worst comic book slash superhero movies I've ever seen.
You know what it's like? Yeah. It's like the creators and the director and writer got together in a room and said, you know what? Let's just throw some shit together and see if we can make money from it. And they got in a room. They had 5-year-old sketch artists make out the production scenes. And they were like, listen, if that looks good enough, let's just do it. And they got a budget because it's Batman. It's the name. So they were going to make money somehow. It did,
of course.
You know what I'm saying? So they probably didn't make $200 million, but they made enough to see something. So, you know, it was a disgrace to the Batman series. Let's just put it that way. Disgrace.
Definitely. You know what? I'm grateful for Batman and Robin, because if it weren't for that, Christopher Nolan wouldn't have had a reason to reboot the whole franchise.
You're right. Absolutely right.
Because we would have been complacent with, okay, you got your classic Tim Burton movies, and then you got your shitty Joel Schumacher movies. All right, I'm done with that, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd have been complacent with mediocrity.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, pretty much. back to Iron Man. You know what? What's one of the true highlights? Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she was awesome, and I liked how she played. Because you know typically when you saw a female character in a superhero film or a comic book adaptation, she was more like a damsel in distress, a love interest kind of character. Iron Man, for me personally, kind of shifted that perception of what a female character could be in a major comic book adaptation. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, she, of course, is Tony Stark's subtle love interest, because he's flirting with her throughout the whole movie, but he's not professing his love for her romantically, you know, because he objectifies women. That's just what he does. But I like how she plays a strong backbone and support system for him in his vulnerable moments.
Yes. And you notice that, because she, like you said, there was not a scene where she backed down to Tony. And you know what's funny? Speaking about like flash forwards a little bit, with this whole, you know, we got the women's movement, we got the Time's Up movement, we got, you know, women, you know, going out into film and doing their thing, being and getting paid the same, and, you know, being equals. And now you have Gwyneth Paltrow back in 08 kind of exhibit that through her character, Pepper Potts, who was this high-powered, yes, she was maybe an assistant, but and in the long run, she was also a mastermind behind running Tony's company as well. You know what I'm saying? So you see that connection there automatically in 08 when this movie came out. So really cool to see that Gwyneth. I mean, the cast, I mean, it was dope. I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow, what can you say? Like, I can't even criticize her. I mean, she was great. She was really good. And you know, I think audiences took to that.
Yeah. Any thoughts, D?
Keanu pretty much nailed every, you know, key point that there is to nail on Gwyneth Paltrow playing Pepper Potts. I mean, strong, you know, she was a strong female, even though she was an assistant / secretary. You know, they said it in a couple of scenes throughout the film. You know, Tony Stark was like, you know, I couldn't even tie my shoes without you. Like, you know, you basically are my backbone. Like, you're basically my suit of armor, because you help me get through things. You help me, you know, do stuff, help me stay on top of things. And, you know, the life of a billionaire playboy, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, scheduling involved as far by himself. So, you know, she keeps him afloat, you know, in that respect. And she's just also, you know, she was strong. She knew how to handle herself. You know, she wasn't, you know, she was brave in certain things, you know, certain scenes. Like, she really, like, you know, set the precedent for, like, yo, we're going to start a movement where we're going to create, you know, more strong female characters and have them have the movie focus on them.
Yeah, that was a nice.
Yeah, right.
that was a very solid point, but Anchor just had to just cut him off mid sentence.
Yeah, Anchor was like, "Nah, let's cut him off right now. Let's do it."
You know what would be really messed up if recording all this time, right, and then
come to find out that only 5 minutes of it got recorded.
Yo, come on, man. That would be, well, then we could look at it and be like, you know, we had a hell of a conversation, just us. We just, it was just us talking the entire time. So
yeah, it was just a hell of a phone conversation where I could be getting sleep instead.
Exactly.
Yeah, I reset the link. He should be rejoining us. Oh, there he is.
I'm back.
Yeah, I was just joking around in your absence. That imagine, because usually we get cut off like way before this. Like we're running on like 18 minutes consecutively without getting cut off. So I'm joking around like, oh, imagine it's going on 18 minutes, but come to find out when it's all said and done, only 5 minutes of it actually recorded.
Oh, nah, that would suck. <man. laughs> That would suck, bro.
That'd be terrible, man.
Terrible. Yeah, I'm gonna have to send an email.
Yeah, man.
You know what I got a kick out of too in Iron Man? Well, you know what? Before I get into that next point, I want to go back to what you said, D, in the beginning of this episode, where you were impressed by how impressive the armor looked and the suit looked.
Oh yeah,
and
absolutely.
I thought it was a perfect translation to the big screen from the comic books. It didn't look too. It actually looked very convincing. Like if you told me not to look twice, I would have thought that it was actual armor and not CGI. I mean, I'm sure they had some armor, obviously, because you have to build like the practical effects around it. But it was so impressively done. It looked great.
Yeah, man. Like if they were selling it, you know, in stores, you know, I would have been online trying to get me one. It looked real.
Yeah, right. You know what was stupid now that I'm thinking about it? And I'm pretty sure this pissed Jon Favreau off as well. How the one Easter egg that's so inconsistent with the rest of this film, as well as the subsequent MCU films, that Easter egg of Captain America's shield on the table when Iron Man comes back from doing whatever he was doing. And you know, seizing those weapons and stuff. His robot is taking off his armor piece by piece.
Yeah.
And Pepper comes into the room and she's you know, oh my God, Tony, like just really concerned. And you see a really quick shot of Captain America's shield, like I guess being constructed or being built on the table behind him. Mm. Can somebody please explain to me the purpose of that Easter egg? Was that just fan service or what? Because there's no continuity with that whatsoever. Like Captain America's shield was built in the 40s during World War II.
Right.
So I'm like, how the hell did it end up? I don't know. The continuity, I found that very weird.
You know, I think that was a little bit of fan service right there, man. I don't think they meant anything by it. Like you said, there's no continuity. I mean, like you said, it was built in the 40s, obviously. So it, My only guess is that they just put that little hidden gem there just to see if fans picked up on it to get a little excited for what was coming out after. That's my guess.
Yeah, I think so too, man. Like definitely felt real fan servicey. Like I guess they just kind of put it in there as like a advertisement. Like, hey, stick around. We're gonna be coming out with much more. Like,
exactly.
That's what it seemed like. Yeah.
Yeah. That's I wouldn't have thought that during that time 10 years ago, but now when I rewatched it, I said to myself, yep, that's definitely fan service and that's definitely like product placement. Oh, there will be a Captain America movie in a couple of years.
Yeah,
like Captain America shield, it just randomly appears on the table. I thought that was funny. Now I want to talk about one of the drawbacks of Iron Man, as great as it is. Yeah. One of my biggest drawback is Terrence Howard.
I was waiting for you to get to this part. Thank
I was
you.
Waiting for that too, man.
Listen. Terrence Howard, for me, I don't know what. Look, I've never
Please
seen an
say
episode
it.
Of Empire,
Please
and I've seen, it. I've seen his other works, his older stuff, even before he became a big name. I think one, I think his voice is incredibly annoying.
Yes,
that's one. And two, facts. I don't think he was that good in this role.
Lewis, I gotta speak on this, man. Let me speak on this. My Terrence Howard is probably one of the most underrated, lucky actors I've ever seen in my life. He is so overrated.
Because the first time you said underrated.
I know. My bad. I said underrated. No. Sorry. Overrated, lucky actors. Overrated, yep. Lucky actors.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
There's nothing special about. There's nothing special about him in anything he does. I think he. Oh God, his voice is annoying. He always he always sounds like he's about to cry in every scene.
Yeah. Oh, that. Like, I just wanted to throw my. I wanted to throw my drink at the TV when I was watching this shit.
Yo, and then your boy had the nerve to try to ask for more money for the next film, the Iron Man film. You know what I'm saying? God. Like, your boy wanted more, like double. And no. Just he didn't do it for me, man. I gotta say one of the worst parts of the film was Terrence Howard. And his S curl that really got me. That really got me upset, man. I couldn't do it.
Hey man, I use S curl from time to time.
Nothing wrong with S curl. But him and the S curl just got me. It just got me angry. I'm sorry. It just got me a little angry.
That's the thing too. I gave him a pass back then because I didn't know he was gonna be replaced by Don Cheadle.
Right.
I've always pronounced his name Cheeto over the.
Yeah, Don. For like, Don Cheeto. Cheeto.
Yeah, it is Cheeto.
Yeah.
I didn't know that he was going to be replaced by Don Cheeto eventually. So I'm like, all right, I'll give it a pass. Whatever. Like, it's cool because they're planting seeds for War Machine. Whatever.
Right.
But it's exactly, you hit the nail on the head. It's exactly what you just said. Every scene, he sounds like he's going to cry. Like, he has the wimpiest voice. He just doesn't do it for me.
No.
At least not anymore. Like, he did it for me in silly movies like Big Mama's House and shit like that.
Right.
But he just didn't do it for me in this movie, man. Like,
nah, man. Like, completely overrated.
Tony.
Tony, don't.
Yeah.
No, completely overrated, man. Overrated actor.
You got a comment, because I remember we were kind of shitting on Terrence Howard at the time too.
Yeah, man. Like, yo, like, I feel like he plays like the same two roles, you know, that he's been playing for like the last like 10 years or so. Like, yeah. Either he's that, you know, asshole bad guy that, you know, he's scary, you know, he's the bad guy that everyone like fears, like this, that, and the third, or he's like an asshole friend.
Mm-hmm.
Whatnot, like, and each role he's done, I feel like he plays the same exact character, and like you said, he's the luckiest overrated actor ever, because he's cruising through these roles and, you know, he's making money. Like, cruising. Look at Empire. Yeah, look at Empire. He pretty much plays like the same exact role he played when he was in, you know, the Best Man movie. So
exactly, man. Yes, oh, exactly, Lord. Exactly. And that's the problem with. God, I'm so glad he's not in this series, because if he was, he would be the worst part of this Marvel universe. Terrence Howard.
Sure. I think him asking for more money in his contract and
money.
Marvel not wanting to give it to him, I think that was a blessing in disguise, because they got a true A-list actor to be his replacement.
Now, I have a question, man. Now, so Terrence Howard at this time. We think he's a shitty actor, right? We at this time he was pretty much riding on a high, man. Like, I think this is after, I think he got Iron Man after he was nominated for the Oscar, after Hustle and Flow.
It was. I think he got cast in the role like about a year or two after that.
All right, yeah. So he's still on a high. He was doing multiple films and all this stuff. So. Terrence Howard, I think at that time, thought, you know what, shit, I'm going to ask for more money. I'm an A-list actor. Why do you think Marvel didn't give it to him? if he, you know, at this time was sort of an A-list actor?
I think, yeah, that's a really solid question. I think, you know what? Because Marvel Studios, as quote unquote perfect as they have been on during this 10-year run, they haven't always, they've had lots of fallouts throughout the years. And I guess that's something that I'm going to hint on or discuss when I get into the other movies. But they've had fallouts with actors, directors, screenwriters. There's been plenty of Marvel films that have been reshot for one reason or another, or rewritten, or an actor or director was replaced. And I think this was when Marvel was just, and okay, their creative vision was in its infancy stage. Like, they already had the long-term plan for the Avengers, because that was like the first step. Like, I don't even think they were thinking about Thanos just yet. They just wanted to get Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, and Hulk their own films so that they can build towards the Avengers. Mm-hmm. And I think it could just be that Terrence Howard had a falling out with either Jon Favreau, Robert Downey Jr., or the studio execs. My boy Carlos Martinez could probably speak on that more, because he knows more about the insider politics and stories and stuff like that. So I'll ask him that question, and he could probably get back to me on that. But yeah. I don't know. I couldn't tell you, honestly.
Could have been a combination of all three.
That's true.
That's true too. Yeah.
That's definitely true. Because I was just wondering, man, because, you know, you got Terrence up here, man, and, you know, he's asking for more money, and any studio head would be like, okay, we got Terrence Howard. I mean, at this point, he's pretty big. He brings in a whole different type of audience as well to our film.
True.
So why don't we just give it to him? So there must have been like you said, there must have been a major falling out, because for them not to give it to him, there must have been something. Must have been, or they just felt like he sucked and he wasn't good enough. I mean, he's not War Machine. So, I mean, he's Terrence Howard. He's Lucius Lyon, man. I mean, come on, man. I mean,
oh God.
How can you take him seriously? I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. I just can't stand the guy. I'm sorry. Can't stand.
I don't know, man. Like, it could have been that too, or like, maybe how he went about, you know, asking for it. You know, like you said, you know, he's coming off of that, you know, Oscar nomination high. He probably was really feeling himself like, yo, I deserve this money. Give me the money or I'm going to cry. Give it to me. Right.
I'll cry right here, right now.
They cut D'Angelo off after that point.
After that point, I think Terrence is listening to something. I think he knows.
Yeah, I know. Terrence
he might know somebody.
He's like, I'm a fuck.
Yeah. Someone's getting cut off tonight. I'm telling you that right now. Someone's getting cut off.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and speaking of fallouts, that's something that when I talk about Iron Man 2, I'm going to touch on. Jon Favreau was really pissed off after the first Iron Man film, because Iron Man was a passion project for him, because he's a huge comic book fan. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he would have made a great Spider-Man film.
Oh yeah,
if he wanted to. Oh, D, you're just rejoining us. So I'm saying that, speaking of fallouts, Jon Favreau had a fallout with Marvel Studios after the first Iron Man. You know, because he's such a comic book fan, and he loves these characters so much that Iron Man was a passion project of his, and he wanted to contain it as an Iron Man film, but as history would rear its ugly head, Marvel Studios wanted to create a series of interconnected, integrated films that are interwoven with one another to build up to, you know, the Avengers. And that's not the vision that Jon Favreau had. So that's why he only directed the first two Iron Mans. He was still involved with the third one.
Yeah.
And he obviously still reprises his role in all these other films. Because I don't think it was that bad of a fallout, but he, you know, I guess at the time he was just like, you know what, you can take this MCU bullshit and shove it up your ass, because I just want to make an Iron Man movie. I don't want to do world building.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, so but that's a topic for when I get to Iron Man 2, because there's obviously a lot to dissect on with that movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the pleasant surprises of me revisiting this film, I completely forgot that it was this movie that where they introduced S.H.I.E.L.D., where Clark Gregg makes his first appearance as Agent Coulson. I always thought, I remembered it as his first appearance being in the second Iron Man movie and not the first one.
Nah, it was definitely the first one, man. Like the second one, that's when, you know, Black Widow got involved with it as well. But yeah, it was definitely the first one for him.
Yeah, that was a nice surprise because it jogged my memory a little bit, and I was like, oh, okay, so man, so Coulson goes back as far as when everything started.
Yeah.
I don't know if Keyote, if you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or have watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at all?
You know, I tried to get into it. I just dropped out, you know, out of nowhere. Mm. Like I tried it. It just didn't keep my attention, man. It just didn't keep it.
It didn't keep your attention in season one, right?
Season one.
Okay. This is what I tell everybody. And D'Angelo, you can attest to this because you and I have been following. I haven't watched season five yet, but
yeah, I'm up to date, man.
You can attest to this next point. Every time somebody tells me, I tried to get into it, but I couldn't. Season one is mediocre at best up until Captain America Winter Soldier was released, because that was released during the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. When that film had its implications of S.H.I.E.L.D. revealing itself as Hydra, those implications have a direct effect on the last six episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. of that first season. Mm-hmm. And those were the best episodes of the entire season. And the show has gotten better and better and better since that.
Really? Yeah, progressively better. Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to leave it at that. So if you ever wanted to get back into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
yeah,
you can like pretty much skip an episode here and there. But once you get to like the last six episodes, you'll see what I'm talking about if you ever get to there, because the twists and turns are crazy. And it was like, okay, where was this show back in September? Now you guys are doing this shit in April?
Yeah, and okay. And they were like, with the way how, you know, those that first, you know, first season was going before those six episodes, they were kind of like on the chopping block, because it was kind of hit or miss, you know, with the ratings and stuff. So those six episodes really changed and just transitioned them into, like, you know, the success that they are now.
Yeah, the characters were poorly written during the majority of that first season. The characters actually have a lot more depth. And you had Ghost Rider in the fourth season. I'm telling you, it's a very good show now. Yes.
That's awesome, bro. Yeah, Ghost Rider. Exactly.
Ghost Rider was my... Yo, what? Okay. All right.
It's a different Ghost Rider. It's not Johnny Blaze motorcycle, but it's the newer Robbie Reyes in
I got it. Okay.
Yeah, in a Challenger or whatever car it is. But anyway, yeah, I digress. But Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that's all I'm going to say about that. If you want to get back into it, you could just literally skip to that episode. What was it? Episode 16 or whatever it is. Episode 17. And you'll see what I'm talking about.
You'll learn everything you need to learn, you know, starting from there. You don't need to find out the character development, because everything is pretty much within right there in that episode going forward.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to check it out then. I can skip the majority of the first half of the first season.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you're not. I mean, watch the pilot, of course, because that's what sets. And the pilot is a good episode, but you know, after that, it's like very cheesy. But Clark Gregg as Phil Coulson, he has a certain charm that it keeps me engaged.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's why I think he was able to be the star of his own series, because he was so. He tested so positively with these test audiences, with the Iron Man movies, and then his role in Thor. And then when he was killed off in the Avengers, it was like, what? Like, everybody loves him. He's great.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Clark Gregg, what did you think of the intro in the Iron Man? Did you think anything of it?
To be honest, I didn't think anything of it. I thought it was awesome to see, obviously, but I didn't. It didn't really do anything for me as far as knowing and understanding more of the Tony Stark character. like I was more focused on that. But I love. Listen, I love seeing Nick Fury and Sam Jackson. You know what I'm saying? Like it was great to see that. On film, like it's so cool to see these characters you've grown up watching and reading about in comic books. Like it's really cool to see that. But as far as you know, feelings of seeing S.H.I.E.L.D. itself, I thought it was cool, man. Nick Fury, I went crazy. I marked out a little bit for Nick Fury, you know. So it was. It was cool to see that. It was really cool.
Yeah, you know, we got to talk about this post credit scene because this was the first, if I'm not mistaken, it was like one of the first of its kind, if not the first of its kind. Mm-hmm. Where they're planting seeds for future films because they weren't really doing that with other films. Like I don't recall any of the Batman, Spider-Man, Superman, X-Men movies doing that. I think X-Men: The Last Stand did that.
Yeah. I remember them doing that.
Now that I recall, yeah, because I think X-Men. Was it X-Men: The Last Stand?
Yeah, because that's when Phoenix killed Professor Xavier, and then you know,
yes.
I think the post credit was like, you know, he's still alive.
Yeah. Oh, okay, all right, right. So that was. But again, that was a rarity because you didn't really see that happening too often. Then it became like a cultural event after Iron Man to always stick around for the end of a Marvel movie. Not just a Marvel movie, but all the other superhero movies followed suit too. Because it was like, you know, what are you jerks leaving the movie theater for? There's a mid-credit scene and a post-credit scene. Where are you going? Sit your asses down.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know what? Oh, D, I'm so glad that we're here reminiscing about this. Listeners, I have a confession. I did not see the post-credit scene in theaters. I found out about that shit when I got back to my dorm room.
Damn.
Yeah, I was pretty upset. Yeah. Because me and D and Eric, we were like just Googling shit. And people are talking about this post-credit scene because I had read rumors about Sam Jackson playing Nick Fury, but I didn't really give it much credence. Then, like, someone had leaked footage on YouTube of the post-credit scene, and I was like, "Wait, what the fuck? We didn't stick around for this." And then that last line, well, the last couple of lines when Nick Fury is just first of all, Samuel Jackson was a pleasant surprise. That's first and foremost, and then second of all, he's just like, you know. You think the whole world revolves around you, like, you know, to that extent.
Yeah.
And he just ends it with, "I'm here to talk to you about the Avengers initiative." And and then you hear everybody in the theater going crazy.
Yeah.
And I got crazy. I was like, wait, they're doing this? They're fucking doing this? Holy shit, they're doing it.
Yeah. Crazy. And I don't think many people thought that it was going to go that far. To see where it is now, it's amazing to see because it's the aside from the other, and I say this with disdain in my voice, the other comic book series comic book company or whatever you want to call it. These films are above and beyond quality, and you know they've been solid, given the audience and the fans what they want to see. And like you said, it started off with the Iron Man film, man. I mean. There you go. Started off with that Avengers joint, and the audience went crazy. And that's all it needed. And then it was off to the races from there.
I mean, like, it's crazy, like, how much things were set off, you know, by this film. Because, you know, 10 years later, like, now, you know, they have apps that tell you, like, if there's going to be a post-credit scene to, like, certain films.
And right.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty much because of, you know, Iron Man started it. Like, you know, once they seen, like, you know, seen what they were doing and, you know, it jumping forward, they was like, yo, we gotta keep up. We gotta advance like how they're advancing. Like, it's mm-hmm. crazy. It's apps that, like, literally, like, oh, yeah, there's tells you, yep, so they sit down, wait. You know, there's going to be a scene after this. Mm-hmm. So, like, nowadays when, like, you know, with watching films now, you know, especially, you know, Marvel films, and like when I see people like leaving, you know, as soon as the credits roll, I just look at them like rookies. Like, what's with you guys, man? Like,
yeah,
that's true. And I love how just that one scene got everybody excited, because then you see all these fan theories about how everything is going to go down. And looking back on it, what's even more impressive about that post-credit scene on Iron Man in general and that world building is that it actually paid off. Because we all know the Avengers could have been a real clusterfuck of a movie where nothing was balanced at all. It could have been poorly written. You know, it was a big gamble. I think the biggest gamble in box office history.
Yeah.
Or movie studio, or major movie studio history, I should say. Because they had to release, what, 5 films prior to that first Avengers mashup?
Yeah.
And to hold the general audience's attention for that long throughout the years,
you know, that's no easy task. That's you're asking for a lot.
You are.
But you're gonna retain the comic book fans. That's a given. Like, you're gonna retain all the geeks and the nerds that grew up reading the comics, watching cartoons, copying merchandise since they were kids. Right. But the general audience, that's what made it even more impressive.
But man, Lewis, those movies had, you just knew by watching the first few films that came out how much passion and quality the creative team was putting into these films, right? You just knew it. You could see from the story, from the actors they were choosing, from the actors that wanted to be in these films, from these big name actors that were coming, like Sam Jackson.
That's true.
Like your Gwyneth Paltrow's, your Hugo Weaving's, Hugo Weaving's. Like, I mean, these actors wanted to be in these films, and you could just tell, man, that if they were going to do an Avengers film, that it was going to be the best written Avengers film, the well balanced with its characters. Everyone gets to shine, and you don't feel like someone got left out. Like, you just knew. And I, honest to God, I knew if they were going to do an Avengers film, it was going to be solid. Was there a little part of me that was a little afraid that maybe Captain America wouldn't get that much shine, or whoever it would be? Yes, but they didn't. Everyone shined and everyone got their story in, and it just flowed and it made sense. And I didn't doubt Marvel at this point, man. At this point, Marvel could do no wrong. No wrong.
Yeah, that's so true. And this is, again, I got to do my research, but I think this is right before Disney acquired Marvel. And I think with the backing of Disney after the first Iron Man and Incredible Hulk and all those initial films, with the backing of Disney, that just put the Marvel Studios, I'm talking just specifically the film company, just put them, it shot them into another stratosphere.
Yes, it did.
Jesus, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, for lack of a better term, it was just, it was crazy. And now, 10 years later, I can see the significance of the first Iron Man movie. I didn't really see it when it first came out, because, you know, some things you just have to give time. Yeah. But now I can see just how much of a seminal film it is. And it came out the same summer as The Dark Knight. You know, that was a great summer if you were a comic book fan, because The Dark Knight, we all know, is a classic. It's a masterpiece.
Right.
Yeah. But Iron Man deserves just as much credit, if you ask me. It's a different type of superhero movie from The Dark Knight, way different, because, you know, it's obviously more lighthearted, a little more family-friendly. But it deserves just as much accolades as the Dark Knight.
It deserves credit, but I can't give it as much accolades as the Dark Knight. I think the Dark Knight was revolutionary in what it was doing as far as storytelling and giving you a real, like, that realism in film where it bridged comic book characters with today's overall feel of what the world is like. And it was just I thought Iron Man was revolutionary in what it was beginning for Marvel, but I think Dark Knight was revolutionary in what it was telling about the world, and just added, and it just happened to have, you know, comic book characters in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just very different psychological thriller, Dark Knight. You had action bridging the whole Avengers universe with Iron Man. So it was different. They both had their stakes in what they were doing, but it was just a little different for me, Lewis. Just a little different experience for me, you know?
Nah, yeah, I hear you.
But I appreciate them both. I appreciate both.
Yeah, no, those are strong points. You know, I'm not saying that Iron Man is the better film. I would never say that. But I think Iron Man still deserves a ton of credit for its time.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, for jumpstarting all the, you know, all this magic that we, you know, we've come to appreciate now.
Yeah, and God bless Robert Downey Jr. because he was able to command more and more and more money after that first Iron Man.
Yeah.
And it was, you know what? It was deservedly so, because he brought Tony Stark to life. Absolutely. Like, no, I don't think any other actor could have. And with each sequel or each appearance, it was like, okay, yeah, you're Tony Stark. Like, I can't see you ever being replaced. Even if he's aging, because, you know, they obviously, all these actors are getting older, especially Robert Downey Jr. But he's Tony Stark as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, they can't take that away from him. Like, he's not even Robert Downey Jr. no more.
No. Now, do you know what Downey made on these films by any chance?
You know, I gotta look that up. Like, I'm too lazy to search that up right now. Maybe one of you guys can look it up, but I know it was this first film. He had a pretty big paycheck, but I know when his contract was up, I think it was I'm gonna say it was like around the time of Age of Ultron, and then when he re-signed to appear in Civil War. And the movies after that, I don't remember the exact number, but it was a lot, basically.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a ton of money, because you got to remember too, this was the movie that you pretty much when all these actors signed. I think Marvel had a contract that they're agreeing to appear in multiple films, and it's not just a sequel or two. Like, so, I think they had already known that it was going to be an interconnected universe. So with that being said, like, they were going to have to make the Comic-Con appearances and, you know, for films that aren't related, not related, but for films that they're not necessarily starring in, quote unquote. So, like, you have your, you know, he signs on a dotted line. Oh, I'm playing Tony Stark. There's going to be a sequel and probably a third sequel. But I also get to appear in an Avengers movie, you know. And if that's successful, another Avengers movie. So, yeah, it's that was the first time, I think, where the actors knew what they were getting into. You know, you're signing right now a 6-picture deal, something like that.
Wow.
Sheesh.
Well,
yeah, because think about it. When Anthony Mackie made his first appearance in Winter Soldier, they had to have disclosed that information to him. Like, listen, this is your introduction to this world, not just this movie. Like, you're going to be in the next Captain America movie. You're going to be in the next two Avengers, next three Avengers movies. Like, you're going to make an appearance in Ant-Man. You know, I'm pretty sure they had that all mapped out for him, and as well as all the other actors.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. Doing some research, guys. I found Downey commanded $40 million for Civil War.
Oh yeah, I knew it was around that ballpark.
$40 million for Civil War, right?
And that's not even a solo Iron Man
film.
Yo, that's crazy.
Unbelievable.
Wow. So 40 million for Civil War. Now, I think that was the last time he was in a Marvel film 2 years ago. So Spider-Man Homecoming. Shit. That's right. That's right. Okay, yeah. Man. So, yeah, his paychecks must have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But I'm wondering what his paychecks were for these two Infinity War movies.
They're going to be retarded. Probably like 50, 55 million. Like.
Downey for the first Avengers film got 50.
Holy shit.
I did remember hearing some number like that. 50 million for the first Avengers. And that's 2012.
Man. Wait. his salary alone, 50 million. For the first Avengers film, I got to look this. This got to be a whole different show because I got to look up what everybody else is getting now because that's crazy. He might be the highest paid in the Marvel universe.
No, I think he is.
Yeah, he is.
He has to be, right?
No, yeah. At one point, Robert Downey Jr. was the highest paid actor in the world.
So who would be second in the Marvel universe, would you say?
That's... You like know
who,
what?
Who would come
if I had to, if I had to take box office receipts into account, probably Chris Evans. Yeah, as Captain Chris America.
You wouldn't think Chris Hemsworth? Thor?
No, because the Captain America movies overall have grossed more than the Thor movies.
Hmm. Yeah.
And Captain America, Chris Evans has made that role iconic as well. Not a lot of people were wearing Captain America shirts before that movie came out.
That's true. Yep. That's
you
true.
Know, so I would assume it's Chris Evans. Like, I would be shocked if it wasn't.
Hmm. Chris Evans.
Cool. It's got to be close to the 30 to 40 million range, maybe.
Damn. So what's the budget for this Infinity War, man?
It's Infinity. That's the budget.
Yeah.
Now guys, I'm gonna. I just found some information. Chris Evans, for playing Captain America, earned $300,000.
Wait, what? For the first movie?
For the first one.
Oh.
Then he made 2 million in the Avengers.
Really?
Whoa.
right?
Shit.
That's insane.
Not big difference, man.
That's insane.
Are you kidding me? 300,000, like just a little over a quarter of a million for the first Captain America?
$300,000.
Yo, that's peanuts, bro.
Reportedly earned $300,000 for his role in Captain America, the first Avenger. What? Then he scored 2 million in his work for the Avengers.
So I'm wondering, because Winter Soldier and Civil War were huge and his stock had risen after that. So I'm wondering what his paychecks were for Winter Soldier and Civil War.
They had to be significantly bigger than that.
Yeah, I would have to assume because even two million for the Avengers is that seems a little low if you ask me.
That's very low.
That sounds like Hawkeye money or Black Widow money.
Yeah. I don't even want to imagine what poor Jeremy Renner got.
Oh God, Jeremy Renner. I mean, if Chris Evans got 2 million, jeez, Jeremy Renner. I mean. Would we dare to say he maybe got $100,000 for that role?
It's possible. I mean, he's appearing in a big Avengers movie, and he doesn't have a huge. You know what it is? He has a big role because Hawkeye and Black Widow are big parts of the Avengers, but it's more like a glorified supporting role, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because when you think of the Avengers. You're not really thinking of Black Widow and Hawkeye, especially Hawkeye, all that much. You're thinking about the marquee stars, Iron Man, Hulk, Captain America, Thor.
Yeah.
You know, like Vision, Scarlet Witch, those are like more secondary, like War Machine and people like that. It's more secondary, mm-hmm. Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. That's very enlightening, actually. 300,000. Yeah, right. I still can't believe that. Like, well, then again, Chris Evans wasn't a household name at that point yet.
Yeah, this, you know, this is
the, you know, he had played the Human Torch in, you know, very mediocre Fantastic Four movies. So they're probably in their minds thinking, okay, let's give it a shot with Chris Evans, and you know, who wouldn't want $300,000?
Right.
Yeah. It's not like $300,000 is that's nothing to scoff at either.
No, it's not.
Definitely not.
Now, mind you, Tom Holland, the kid who plays the new Spider-Man, he made about $2.5 million on his film.
Yeah, you know why though, right? Because Spider-Man is there's more merchandise and marketing involved with Spider-Man. Because Spider-Man is probably, arguably, one of the three most recognizable superheroes in the entire world, and you can only imagine what the other two are. It's Batman and Superman.
Right.
Yeah, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man. Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody in every nation in the world knows who Spider-Man is. So when you're taking on a big role like that, there's, you know, more marketing, more merchandise sales, just a lot more crossover appeal. Captain America doesn't have that much crossover appeal. So yeah. I could kind of see, now that I'm thinking about it, I could kind of see the 300,000, but I would have assumed like a little closer to a million.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of cheap still, even for the first Captain America movie.
Yeah, yeah. Because it did make, you know, it made great money. So, I don't know. I would assume he made, like, some kind of bonus or something. Mm-hmm. Well, wow.
Yeah, with the Marvel retrospect, when I get up to Captain America, I got to give Chris Evans props because, well, not just Chris Evans, obviously, but all the filmmakers involved and the writers, because the Captain America is the one Avenger from this Marvel Studios universe that had a consistent trilogy or consistent series of films that got better and better and better.
Yeah, it's up there with the Iron Man series. Like, they're like neck and neck pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even the Iron Man series has been polarizing after the first one. You know, I mean, not everybody liked it. I really enjoyed the third one, but not everybody thought the same thing. But it seems like it's unanimous with the Captain America movies that the first one is good, Winter Soldier is a classic, like a bona fide classic, and Civil War is like right up there with being regarded as a classic. So, yeah, I mean, those are all Captain America movies.
Shit.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. I mean, I myself, even a couple of years ago, started buying Captain America t-shirts.
You
and I have like two of them shits in my closet. So
yeah, that's very interesting. I guess, you know, I could see that. I could see it being you know, not being as at first being as big of a moneymaker as like your noticeable superhero characters and stuff like that. I could see that.
Oh yeah! Now, if you mention that a new Captain America movie is coming out, like people flock to the movie theaters because now Captain America is officially a household superhero name.
Yeah, and they definitely got to pay him. Like he can ask for what he wants at this point.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, too bad he's probably going to be the one that gets killed off. But
yeah, right. Jesus,
that's far for the course.
Wait, you think you who? Wait, who? I missed that. Who you think is going to get killed off?
Captain America. If it's not Captain America, it's Iron Man.
Yeah, it's one of them.
Neither of them are coming back. They're not renewing their contracts for any reason because Robert Downey Jr. is already mad old, and Chris Evans is probably ready to move on himself. So
do some other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and in the comic book, Captain America dies and is replaced by Bucky anyway. Yeah, so it would make the most sense if he was the one that died. I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
Oh, okay. Man.
But, you know, I'll find out on Saturday, April 20th.
Yeah, man, you're God all willing, set, man.
Because I got my tickets.
Yeah, you're set, man.
You're set.
God bless you.
You're set. Yeah. You're set. I'm gonna get mine soon, man. I'm going to get mine soon.
Yeah, same here.
You know, real quick side note before we end the convo. You know that it's sold out within, like, I think less than 6 hours or something like that in most IMAX screens, or if really? Not every IMAX screen for the Thursday screening.
Yeah, yeah. It was a wrap at Lincoln Square, so I can imagine.
Oh. I mean I can see that.
Yeah, it just when Black Panther set the record for pre-ticket sales, Infinity War just completely demolishes the record. Yes. So you kind of see where this is going with the box office numbers for Infinity War.
Yeah, it's gonna demolish everything. Like, Jesus.
Are you calling a okay. I think our threshold right now, but we can, well, what we can go by right now is what Black Panther is doing right now. Black Panther is still at number one.
Oh yeah.
With $607 million only in the States.
Yeah, that's amazing.
With a 1.1 billion worldwide. Now, are we saying, and this has been out since
February. It's been out for 5 weeks now.
Yeah,
February 16th.
February 16th, right? So a little over a month. So we're saying that, what's your prediction for numbers for the first month of Infinity War?
I say it touches 600 million easy.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Black Panther had the benefit of not having huge competition in February.
That's also true.
Because you got to remember too that Infinity War by a week so that it can give other films, those weren't the intentions, of course, but it got pushed back essentially because the fans couldn't wait. The anticipation was at an all-time high and they wanted to release the film globally at the same time. So it's that avoids like early leakage with piracy and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it gives Disney their other film, Solo, a Star Wars story. It gives that film breathe because that would have came out 3 weeks after Infinity War. Mm-hmm. So they figured, you know what? Why not just push it back? Like it's better for all parties involved. But in May, you have Deadpool 2 coming out like a couple of weeks after Infinity War. And then like a week or two after that is the Solo film. And then you also have Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom in June. So, you know, you have a lot more competition for Infinity War.
Right.
I still have no doubt in my mind that it's going to reach 600 million. I just don't know if it's going to do it as fast as Black Panther. Well, you know, time will only tell.
Okay, I agree. I think
you are dealing with a film that's a lot longer. You know, it's clocking in at 2 hours and 36 minutes, as opposed to Black Panther, which was like I think 20 minutes shorter.
Yeah, it was 2:20, 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, Black Panther was 2:20. It didn't even feel like that.
Yeah, because it was so good.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You weren't even thinking about the time at that point. Like it, yeah, it clocked in at 2:20.
Oh wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, 2:20. I'm gonna give Infinity War. I think in a month's time it'll hit 700 million.
Whoa, you think 700 million? That's interesting.
I think in a month's time, Infinity War. I think it's gonna be huge. I think I'm gonna go 670 to a cruising 700 million.
Man, we ought to put some money on this.
We should.
Like, I'm predicting like a modest, quote unquote modest, 600 million in 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, I'm going higher than that, man. I'm going to go higher.
Holy shit! You know what though? I would not be surprised if it did because this is the first part of a 10-year culmination. Like every Marvel character that you've seen on screen since the first Iron Man, this is it. So that wouldn't surprise me either.
Yep, I'm going for it. I think it's definitely touching the 650-700 million range.
You know what? And that's going to bring a huge smile to my face because well, for a number of reasons, because it's going to be nice to see that the payoff was worth the payoff. The payoff was worth the investment.
Yes,
which is absolutely always nice to see, especially when you're a fan. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it pretty much shows Warner Brothers, the good folks at Warner Brothers and DC, how it's done.
Yes,
you know, because they've just pissed me off the last 5 years.
Yeah, man, like, very disappointing.
Just putting out these films that, you know, you're looking forward to more or less, and then just like just putting out these really mediocre movies. Like, don't get me wrong, Dawn of Justice, Batman versus Superman was okay. I don't think it was as bad as people made it out to be, but it could have been so much more. I wasn't feeling Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. It was just a little all over the place for me.
Yeah, I did a show. I did a show on that, and I completely trashed it. I was very disappointed. Very disappointed. I had very high expectations, and I felt like I was let down everywhere. I was just very, very disappointed, man.
My only highlight that I actually enjoyed was Ben Affleck as Batman. I thought Ben Affleck makes a good older version of Bruce Wayne. But other than that, not a very good film.
No, not at all.
And you know what? I still haven't seen Justice League. I still haven't seen Suicide Squad. Wonder Woman was
really.
Yeah, I still haven't. I haven't gotten around to watching any of
them. Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh wait. You know what? I take that back. I saw a little bit of Suicide Squad. Yeah, because when I was at my father-in-law's house, yeah, he had it playing on the TV, and I saw a little bit of it, and I'm like, yeah, it's all right. Yeah, nothing special. But you know, but Man of Steel was a disappointment, and from what I'm hearing, Justice League is a hot mess.
You know what? You know what? I actually liked Man of Steel.
It was okay for me. It didn't really do much for me, to be honest.
I loved Hans Zimmer's score. I liked the way Zack Snyder's look. I kind of really enjoyed it. It was a darker Superman, yes, but I really liked a lot about that film. I liked a lot about it. Now as far as the details, or maybe I'm not sure of the details as far as story and all that stuff. I'm not a big superhero. I mean, Superman. I'm not crazy knowledgeable on Superman, but overall film, I did enjoy.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe I have to watch it again. Because my first reaction from watching it in the movie theater, and I saw it on IMAX, the whole shebang, I just thought it was okay. I mean, I liked Michael Shannon as General Zod. And,
right, me too. Yep.
You know, Kevin Costner was good in it too.
Yeah.
I just felt like, you know, it had little touches of Christopher Nolan here and there because he did executive produce, and I think he got a story credit as well. Maybe it's because I'm not that crazy about Superman. I liked Superman a lot when I was a little boy, but I don't know. It just didn't do much for me. It didn't really resonate with me. It didn't stick with me like I thought it would.
Okay. All right.
Don't get me wrong. I wanted to love it. I really did. But I don't know. I just couldn't get into it.
Just couldn't get it.
Yeah. But let me stop this recording session and send you another link so we can do a closing.
Yes, sir.
He hasn't been on in like 2-3 minutes.
All right.
Well, yes. I guess he's having technical difficulties. So unless he joins us within the next 60 seconds, then yeah.
All right.
Anyway, any final thoughts on Iron Man and its successes?
No, man, you know, I'm going to go back. Before we, you know, did the show today, I said to myself, I have to watch this Iron Man again. Like you said, it's been a while for you that you've watched it. It's been a while for me, too. I'm going to start really going back and kind of looking at some of these films to gear up for the Colossus of all movies right now. So,
That's a perfect way to describe it.
I'm gonna definitely go back, do some research on these films, watch one of my favorites, The Incredible Hulk, and you know, just go and you know, just keep going from there, man. Just keep going from there.
You know, man, you're right up there with my boy Carlos. He loves The Incredible Hulk, and he was trying to convince me for years that It's so underrated.
Yes,
and mind you, I saw it in the theaters. You know, I enjoyed it. You know, and I've seen it twice. I don't think it's as good as he says, but maybe my opinion will change the third time.
Okay.
So, you know, that'll be hopefully next week. I'm gonna try to squeeze in the Incredible Hulk at some point within the next 7 days. Because at this rate, it seems like I'm only going to be watching one movie a week. It would literally take me about 18 weeks to complete this Marvel Retrospect series.
It's going to take you a while, brother. It's going to take you.
I know, because, man, Iron Man, I'm telling you, it took me about, like, 2 or 3 days to get through it.
Man.
It was, like, 1 hour here, another half hour there, and then finally the final 45 minutes here. And...
Man. No, yeah, listen, man, you'll catch up. You'll do your thing. You'll find a way. You'll find a way.
Of course. There's all these great websites. I'm not stressing the accessibility aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, man, I wish D'Angelo was here so I can thank him, but I guess I'll have to hit him up later. But thank you guys so much for coming on to entry number one of Marvel Retrospect.
Yes, sir.
And let's see what news comes out with regards to some of these films, because the reason why I say that is because Deadpool, they just did some reshoots with a surprise / secret cameo.
Really?
Yeah, I literally just read that today because I just happened to Google Deadpool 2 because I haven't really been seeing too much press coming out. And yeah, like the first headline that comes up, Deadpool 2 just did some reshoots and there's a surprise cameo in there.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Yeah, so that's why I think this is a very interesting time for headlines all across entertainment. Yeah, you got some big summer movies about to drop. WrestleMania's around the corner.
Yes, sir.
Been medically cleared, which we definitely got to get into at some point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. So that's a wrap for entry number one.
Entry number one. Sealed. Nice.
Yep, nice. So it's in the books. All right, I'll catch you later. You have a good night.
You too, brother. Have a good one.
Thanks, man.
Later.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.